It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast as we talk property news, as you know, every day, 7 days a week, as heard on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as Amazon. And who isn't talking about real estate these days anyway, when shelter plays such a big part of how we all survive by having that roof over our heads? And that is a very old saying, but probably more than ever is so relevant in these challenging times that we live in. There will be people sleeping tonight in tents, not because they are on holiday, but because it is their roof over their heads. And people living in cars, sleeping in cars. So, you know, the housing crisis goes on. And on that note, I hope you had a great weekend. Just to lighten it up a little bit, it is a Monday today, April the 22nd, and we're going to be talking about sustainable housing and living. Now, this is creeping more and more into the real estate landscape, and you might be in the middle of doing that, either with an existing house or having it spec'd into a new property. And we need to be thinking as a country ways to enhance our living whilst saving money, especially when it comes to those expensive energy bills. And joining us this morning is architect Shannon Battison from The Mill. And a very good morning to you, Shannon. Welcome to the Real Estate Breakfast.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first off, just how big has this term sustainable living gotten over the last 5 years, do you think?
Look, I think it's got so big, we're on the verge of needing, you know, a new expression for it. I think we saw it, you know, years ago with kind of when it was all about green design and green living, and then it became a little bit overused and the kind of notion of greenwashing came in, where everybody was using the term without necessarily having stuff to back it up. And I think that as a society, our inclination and our interest in sustainable living has got almost to that same point now where we might need to start breaking it down into its different components.
I wonder too, when you start talking sustainable living, whether something goes off in people's heads where they say, oh, sustainable, it's expensive, very expensive, can't afford to do that, and they automatically discount it.
There is absolutely the preconception, and I would say misconception, that sustainable design, sustainable living costs more to build. But I think that it's not actually necessarily true. So much of what is sustainable is actually shouldn't cost you anything extra. But also, I think we need to think about the fact that we can't really afford not to do it. I think that our planet is telling us around us that we're really at a point where we're struggling. And so we need to find a way as a whole society to get these measures into our houses now so that our planet, you know, stops this incredible kind of degradation that's happening.
Yeah, no, well spoken. That's exactly right. And I guess we should talk about the complexity of sustainable design, because there are some of those without doubt.
Absolutely. Look, I think one of the things that I really love as an architect who specializes in solar passive architecture is that so much about what makes a building sustainable, and very few buildings are really sustainable, but what we can do is make buildings super low energy use. And we do that by making sure that they actually just use the weather around them, the climate, to its best advantage. So I'm based in Canberra, and one of the best things about our climate here in Canberra, even though it's really harsh, we have super cold winters, but the days are almost always sunny. So there's lots of free sun to be gained, lots of light and lots of free warmth. And then in the summer, our summers are actually short but really hot, but our evenings are almost always cool. So if we can just design to make sure that we can open windows and get great venting through at night and cool the house down, then it's actually really quite easy. And so those are really simple measures that actually shouldn't cost you any extra and just need you to think about them a little bit before you build, before we kind of pick up the hammer and saw. Think about, you know, where we're building, what the climate offers you, and how you can actually use it to your best advantage.
Yeah, so you're talking about those sunshine hours where you are. Another really big aspect to all of this is buying a property that is north-facing. Now, when I bought my first home, people told me, they weighed in, because I was only 19 at the time, they were saying, well, make sure that it is north-facing. People said, if it's not north-facing, don't buy it because, you know, it won't be a sunny house. Now, today, 2024, people have almost sort of forgotten that golden rule with the sunshine when buying properties. Are you finding that from an architectural point of view?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I find quite entertaining, I guess, in a way, is that when an architect says a house is north-facing, what we mean is that our living areas or the spaces that we spend the most daytime hours in are on the north side of the house. And I often see ads in the paper for houses that claim them to be north-facing, and what they mean is that the front door faces north and so the street is to the north, which is actually one of your most difficult orientations to build in a sustainable way in. And so I think that we've somewhere along the line forgotten that north facing really means eliminating all sorts of troubles down the track about trying to eliminate, you know, bad sun, i.e. summer sun that's just too hot for you. But it also just gives you so much, and what you want from it, that daylight, that free warmth, all of those things you want in your living areas. So for a house to be north facing, what we want is those rooms that we spend the most time in, our living area, living, dining, kitchen spaces, even a study, now that we all work so much more from home, have those spaces on the north side of the house so that you're getting all of that fantastic sunlight in for free.
Yeah, because I remember looking at my auntie's bathroom. This is years ago, and she built this property new, and it was like 35 years. And I said, that ceiling in the bathroom, it's never been painted, has it, in 35 years? And she said, no. And I said, there's absolutely no mold. And the reason for that is it was perfectly north-facing for that bathroom.
Yeah. And oddly, a space that you probably don't actually hang out in that much time, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So you want the orientation of north facing for those particular areas that you talk about. Okay, so we are talking to Shannon this morning all about sustainable housing, sustainable living, and we'll come back, we'll talk more after this.
Every week, real estate transactions take place as the market shifts month by month. And every day, we keep you better informed and updated on The Real Estate Podcast.
Hey, we've mentioned this before, but I think it's worthwhile breaking this down and talking about it again, because it is in the news for all of the wrong reasons. And that is making sure that you get a pest inspection done on a prospective property that you are thinking about buying. Homeowners are still rushing into contracts without doing proper due diligence. And you just can't do that. There is an uptick at the moment in the news with newly purchased homes with structural or termite issues that have been discovered after buyers have bought properties. And it's especially a problem in Queensland. Why is it a problem there? Well, the Queensland property market is still in good times and selling plenty. So vendors are in a strong position, and as a result, the buyers are rushing in without having this work carried out. And there can be some real heartbreak faced by some of these buyers realizing the extent of the damage, often requiring costly repairs or even worse, demolition after the fact of buying. And some of the pest control experts, they do say and they do warn against solely relying on real estate agents. Make sure that you seek out independent inspections to avoid losing some of your money, and in some cases, people have lost life savings.
We talk to some of the most influential figures in the real estate industry, from leading commentators to investors to real estate principals. Only on The Real Estate Podcast.
And it's a Real Estate Monday, and we are back with architect Shannon Battison from The Mill this morning and talking all about sustainable housing. That's my next question to you, Shannon. Just how switched on these days are people when it comes to sustainable housing, and just as important, that whole sustainable living?
more and more home buyers are getting really switched on to the benefits of it. But I think that we've got a really long way to go. I live in a new suburb, and so much of what gets built and sold around us is really selling all the different things. So having, you know, lots of bedrooms and multiple living spaces and a covered al fresco and all those things, which are great to have in a house, but actually don't make a massive difference to how much energy you use in living in a house and actually how healthy a house is to live in. And one of the things that we really like to focus on with clients, whether we're building a new house or renovating an old house, is really creating spaces and creating a space that is happy and healthy to live in. And a huge part of the measures that we put in to make a house also be sustainable and low energy use actually happen to have massive health benefits and psychological benefits for the people who are living in it. You think about living in a house that's, you know, really dark all the time and always really cold, and you don't quite relax ever. And it can have a really big impact on your mental state, and it can have an impact on, you know, how easily you live within a house. And so all of these things we really need to be concentrating more and more on when it comes to buying a house. As you walk through it, don't just notice, you know, a tick list of things that are in it, but also notice, where do the windows face? What are you looking out into? Is there sunshine coming in? All those things actually make a house so much healthier to live in.
Yeah, we can call that psychology performance within a house. I just made that up, but that sort of sounds kind of right, doesn't it?
I'll use it from this point forward.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, I mean, that whole psychology, I mean, I can never understand why people buy on busy roads. So to your point, if you've got a dark property and maybe one that isn't facing north on a very busy road, I mean, you'd be going out of your mind in 6 months.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? I grew up under a flight path in Sydney, and we would regularly, you know, conversations would stop when an aircraft came in to land, and the noise just kind of took over, and conversation would keep on going as soon as it passed over, and none of us really noticed it. But when it comes to certain noises, particularly road noises, it can be really, really disruptive and really damaging. And so it is worth looking at what's around the house. The house might be beautiful or have something, you know, that you really are looking for in your property, being it something on a, you know, a tick list, but have a look at what's around it. One of the things I found really surprising as I've got older is that I never thought I would live in a new suburb. And we moved out to a new suburb temporarily because it's where we could afford to build a really high performing, low energy use house. And I've stayed because it's full of parks and other families, and my children play in the street with our neighbours. Whereas in the older suburb where we were one of the few young families there. And so I think one of the things that we need to do more of is actually zoom out a little bit, look at what's around the house and what else is adding to your enjoyment of living there.
Yeah, well, those are all really valid points. And thank you so much, Shannon, for coming onto the Real Estate Podcast. There's a bunch of other questions that I want to ask you, and I reckon we get you back in maybe 3 weeks' time and sort of dive into this a little bit more. So, yeah, we'll talk to you then.
Brilliant. Look forward to it.
Decode the property market with insider knowledge and insights to better navigate your real estate journey on the Real Estate Podcast.
In northern New South Wales, actually, there's some really attractive options for first home buyers at the moment around stamp duty exemptions or discounts.
And you're not going to get much for if you can only save $100,000. If you're looking at living in Sydney or Melbourne, it's only going to buy you a unit with some fairly high mortgage insurance premiums.
But if you look at the middle sector at the moment, that's really starting to heat up, and you're starting to see properties in that sort of $1 million to $2 million range get snapped up very quickly within sort of 3 to 7 days from the stuff that I've been looking at.
But what you really want to look at is the 10-year price growth, which is 110.1%. That's the highest 10-year price growth compared to Ballarat and Shepparton.
So property market in Dickey Beach is quite slow, and only 19 properties have been sold in the past 12 months.
We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia, the Real Estate Podcast.